Hello, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Griffin McElroy.
Look at this stance you have.
Which stance is it that I'm doing? Oh, you're talking about crane pose.
Oh, is that what that is?
That is what it is, and I'm ready to strike. And if someone comes at me with a weapon or at you with a weapon, they're going to get one of these.
That little kick.
One of these.
Yeah. Oh,
that was three kicks all in a row. And a lot of people can't even kick once as fast as I kick three times. Because I think it's important to protect this house, protect my love, protect our child with my many kicks that I can do. And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be talking about this on the podcast, you know, because I don't want to sound like a bad boy. But if you come in my house with a weapon, I'll do like six or seven kicks at you. So
do you want to talk about the Max Fun Drive?
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's what's paid for all of my different lessons.
In kicking
and fighting. And this is the final week, isn't it? Just a couple more days here on the old Max Fun Drive. And although we've come to the end of the road, please support our show. It's impossible to do this show without your support.
Oh, babe.
I've been working on that for 3 years. if you do not mind, it would be super solid of you to go to MaximumFun.org/join and think about becoming a member of the network and a supporter of our show. It is a very, very direct way of supporting our show. When you do become a member, you choose the membership level that works for you, and you get to check out all the different rewards that you can get at those levels. $5 a month, you get that bonus content. $10, you get the pin. And $20 a month,
you get
the games.
The shows.
But yeah, you pick the shows you want to directly support.
Yeah.
A chunk of that goes to Max Fun for helping us out with all the things that they do. But otherwise, just the shows that you pick are the shows that your money is directly sent to. So like, it's a very, very just democratic way of choosing how to help us out.
Last week, we put up a new bonus episode.
We did.
It was our cruise show.
From the Joko cruise, the doomed Joko cruise, which feels like a million, brillion, skrillion years ago. You get to hear all about some of the horrifying events that happened to us and our friends on that cruise.
Some of our favorite ocean-related things.
Yes, there's an at-length discussion of Deep Blue Sea starring LL Cool J.
I talk about the Sharknado franchise.
Yes, you do. It's a lot of fun. We have a ton of bonus content on there. But, you know, really the biggest thing you get is the sense of satisfaction and, you know, feeling of you know, good cheer for helping us out. I've been doing podcasts on Max Fun for 10 years now, and the lives we have now, the careers we have now, the stuff that we make now is only possible because of the support we've gotten from folks like you. So if you've been thinking about doing it, don't delay, because again, there's only a couple days left in the drive. Go to MaximumFun.org/join now, please. I think, small wonders.
Small wonders. Hey, I can go first this week.
Okay.
Butter.
Butter.
Love butter. Realized maybe 80% of the time when I find a dish particularly good is because there is a lot
of butter in it.
A lot of butter.
I actually heard that Paula Deen got her whole sort of like aesthetic from you.
Oh, yeah.
And by that, I mean her love of butter.
Uh-huh. She saw this tiny St. Louis girl.
Yeah.
Just really slathering it on in a restaurant.
Eating a stick of Land O'Lakes like it was a Snickers bar.
And thinking, you know what? I'm going to make a whole thing just around that.
Yes. I wanted to talk about a show that we recently watched on Netflix called Love on the Spectrum, which I don't know a ton about or how it was made. But it is essentially a reality dating show about people on the autism spectrum. And you follow along with like eight or so folks. I think it's only like four episodes. It's not a very long, haul. But, you know, Rachel and I are fans of a good dating reality show, of which there are very, very few these days. And I think that it like, you know, scratches all of those particular itches, but it also offers a look at the autism spectrum in a way that is like so, it's so tangible. It's so like, by placing it through the lens of first dates, which is like one of the more sort of socially uncomfortable life events that any person can go through. It makes it so relatable. And so then when you are, offered these glimpses into where each of these different people land on the spectrum and like how that sort of manifests on these dates, it gave me a genuine, I feel like, understanding of what the spectrum is and like where, what it looks like to be on different parts of it better than like literally anything I've ever seen. And I want to couch that by saying like, it felt like to me, it was a fairly responsibly made show. Like I didn't find anything about it like particularly exploitive, which I think would be a very, very easy thing to do, but well, I don't want to like set that in.
I think part of what's really successful about it, and Griffin and I commented on it right away, is that they show a lot of really successful couples.
Sure.
Where one or both partners are on the spectrum. And so it's not like you just see these dating shows and it's just like, oh, dating's hard. It's like, let's see what this looks like when a couple is successful.
Right.
So you feel like, oh, okay, you feel hopeful and you feel really encouraged and it's really heartwarming.
It is heartwarming. Like you are rooting for the people on this show, like so hardcore.
The couples that are making it work, it's great.
Also, as genuinely as, I feel fairly like with it when it comes to like the autism spectrum and like understanding like what it is, but like it really, really like, I don't know. It just, it is very, I feel like, educational about sort of like what it means to be on different parts of the spectrum. And I thought it was really, really incredible. You do get the like, it is not much like a dating show. It's like not, there's this element of non-reality to it because like they are being filmed, right?
Yeah.
And because like a lot of these, the folks on this show who are on the spectrum have like an aversion to sort of social, what's the word? Artifice like that. Like it, there is an element of like, discomfort there that maybe should not be there, or maybe is like more uncomfortable than it needs to be. But I don't know. I think in general, like I thought it was really terrific and heartwarming and genuinely sweet. You go first this week. Do you want to hit it?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about, for my first thing, pretend play.
Mm. Like with kids or like in the, you mean pretend play like...
Is this who you want to be?
You know what I mean? Like how we in the bedroom sometimes do like a little light John Garfield play.
Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you're a pharmacist and I am picking up a prescription.
Yeah. Or sometimes like I'm a cumulonimbus cloud and you're an airplane.
Wow.
Flying through me.
That was really powerful for me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it has to be.
No, I'm talking about kids.
Oh, okay, that's better. I would rather talk about that.
Yeah, me too. That's why I picked that.
Good.
This is something that I'm really proud of for Henry. I think it's one of those things like, in those early years, you have those milestones of like talking and walking and potty training and all that stuff. But I think the thing that has been most fun for me to watch and the thing that I really like, I don't know. I don't want to say brag on, but feel like this is a demonstration of like how cool he is his pretend play abilities.
Well, I think we can like couch it by saying maths. He's just constantly putting up bricks.
Yeah, he's never been really good at the kind of the show pieces that a lot of parents say, like sing your ABC song. Like, can't do it.
No, yeah.
Can't do it. Infrequently can count to 10. But not like not the kind of thing we'd put on a stage and say, do it, Henry.
No,
it's more
yeah.
like, hey, take this Batman and this Flash and create a world for
an entire,
us.
Yesterday it is exhausting for us in a way that is like kind of difficult to understand because it's not like he is running us ragged. He certainly does do that from time to time where he just wants to like sprint all around the house or like be pushed on his, scooter or whatever all around the neighborhood. And that's exhausting in one way. But yesterday, for probably about an hour and 15 minutes, he wanted to do an extended Inside Out role play using like these little, using magnet tiles. So like the red triangle was anger and the yellow triangle was joy. And like he wanted to do all the emotions for no joke, about the runtime of the entire film Inside Out. And I got to the end of it like, I am creatively spent, my man.
It's one of those things, too, like when Griffin and I talked about our own childhoods, we realized was a big part of like our growing up. I mean, me particularly because I was an only child, and maybe you because you were the youngest. Mm-hmm. It's like you create your own little characters in your own little world, and it becomes like a big part of what you do when you play, particularly when you're not, let's say, a especially athletic kid.
Sure.
And so it was something that like when I saw Henry do it, I was like, oh, I remember that. That's me. And I feel like it's also particularly suited well for Griffin because Griffin's such a good like storyteller, improviser, you know.
It has improved my improvisational skills really dramatically. We were talking to your parents yesterday about how Henry likes wrong books, where he wants us to read books but to do every single thing in the book wrong, like say the wrong names and the wrong colors and the wrong like everything. And like I feel like I could join like a Herald team at this point because of how
he's forgotten to like, part of me understands it, right? He has so many books that we've read to him hundreds of times, and so for him he knows the book now and he's excited to see what the story would be if it were different.
Yeah,
but he started doing that with new books, which I think he doesn't really get. Like you don't even know this is right. Wrong, really. I mean, I guess you could look at the pictures and determine it, but you've forgotten the point of this game,
right?
And so I, you know, maybe for my own like edification, and also just out of curiosity, I looked into like pretend play.
Right.
And I'll, cause it seems like the kind of thing that would build a lot of skills, right?
Absolutely. Sure.
Like there's obviously a lot of creativity involved, but there's a lot of opportunities to kind of demonstrate and act out different things that you're not maybe personally experiencing.
Yes.
That there's a lot of value in that. Like a lot of research talks about how you have the opportunity to express both positive and negative feelings and kind of integrate emotion with cognition. Like this, and I've seen that with Henry too. Like sometimes all the characters are playing and one doesn't have a friend, and he'll like bring a friend in and talk about how it feels. And it's just like, it's cool to see him kind of test out emotions and problem solving in this little made up world that he's created.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of value in that, especially in a time where he's not really getting to be around a lot of other kids.
I will say though, yesterday during our extended Inside Out LARPing that we were doing, he got really angry that I wouldn't make the sadness emotion become happy. And I was like, I don't think you understood the entire thesis of that film, my 3-year-old dog.
They also talk about how it gives the opportunity to work through kind of reduced aggression and delay of gratification, empathy, this idea, especially if you're playing with other kids and you can't control the narrative as much.
Right.
I will say with Henry, as you just mentioned, he kind of tells us where the story can go. I imagine if he were playing with other kids, they would be less accommodating.
Yeah, he'll steamroll right over us, but he has a deference for older children that I think, you know, nullifies that somewhat.
I mentioned the increase of creativity. There's also a suggestion, like when they look at like Nobel Prize and MacArthur winners, that those early childhood games were kind of more make-believe and creative.
Sure.
You know, kind of expanding your later capacity to kind of imagine these worlds.
Yeah.
You know, and do things that aren't possible currently. And just building curiosity too. That for me, like if anybody were to ask kind of the skill that I think is most valuable just in your entire lifespan, I feel like curiosity, like number one.
Yeah.
Right. It's one of the things that I like always respected so much.
Whistling.
About older people.
Yeah. Whistling is first than
their
curiosity.
Whistling.
Yeah.
Their whistling ability. I mean, when you look at a person that can whistle.
Yeah,
sure. You think like, what isn't possible?
Yeah. You know? What else that mouth do is what Rachel likes to say. Oh, Rachel likes to say that. Rachel loves to say that.
Yeah.
On the street. Like you see like somebody like a little skip in their step, like, and you're like, what else does that mouth do? You don't say that like loud.
Well, no, I mean, I have shouted it across the street before.
You did do that once or twice.
Yeah.
And you were spoken to sternly by an officer of the law.
Excuse me, miss.
Yeah.
We don't do that.
We don't do that here.
I will say, like, there was a researcher that looked at kind of the stages of play, which I thought was interesting. This is Dr. Sarah Smolansky. Mm-hmm. And she talks about kind of, you know, initially kids, when they are learning to play, there's doing something called functional play, which is just like a, here is a teddy bear and I am giving it a drink of water. And that's kind of the first stage of like, I'm pushing a shopping cart to put things in. And then constructive play, where they're like building a house out of blocks, like this idea of like, they're doing a little bit more creativity, but it's right. still like, I'm going to make this thing that I know it really exists and it's going to look like the thing that exists. And then dramatic play is what happens from like age three and on, which is like, you know, you're cooperating, you're using something to represent something else from its original purpose. And you're kind of imitating familiar scenarios in your play.
You're writing an entire fucking Tennessee Williams play, but starring the Avengers, which is our usual MO around this household.
Yeah, he has started to understand, I think, a little bit that the Avengers universe is different than the Batman universe. I've noticed
that. Yeah.
They still interact, but he gets that they're not like coexisting traditionally.
Yeah.
The fourth stage of play often is just like where you learn how to play games. Like when you learn how to do. I know this Griffin is really anxious for this
really
one.
Really pushing that. Come on, bud.
When you figure out that there are rules and there are ways to play certain games and that it is important to stick to those rules.
Yeah. I get out the chess set every once in a while and he'll like roundhouse kick all the pieces off of it. I'll be like, that's progress.
We've gotten to, he kind of understands hide and seek.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, there are rules associated with that.
Sure.
So we're getting there.
Yeah.
But that's my thing. Pretend play.
That's very good. I have weirdly, my first thing is kind of the exact polar opposite of that. And it's real work. No. my first thing, okay, this is going to sound really, really out there. So I need everybody to kind of like stick with me and grant me like 5 or 6 minutes of just kind of like clemency while I lay it all out. Okay. My first thing is nightmares. We've talked about dreams on the show before. Rachel specifically has talked about dreams on the show. I don't think nightmares themselves are great, obviously. I think they're scary and they can contribute to sleep deprivation, which I've never really, I don't think I've talked about on this show or any other, but is like a thing I really struggle with, particularly since we've been in quarantine. I have had bouts of insomnia that have lasted for very, very, very long stretches of time where I only get like a few hours of sleep a night. And it sucks shit and it's bad. And I've definitely seen my nightmares count tick up during that time. And when I say nightmares, like I'm not talking about just like bad dreams. I'm talking about like long, extended, like vivid, disturbing dreams. That,
and
like,
why are these wonderful?
Oh, I'm going to get there.
Okay.
They are common among children, but they are less so among adults. I didn't realize this, but I found a couple places that corroborated this. About only half of adults actually have like occasional nightmares.
Really? That seems so low.
It seems wild. Only 2 to 8% of adults have them like very frequently. And I would count myself among that number because I have them really quite frequently.
I've never talked
to
anybody and had them be like, oh yeah, I don't know that I've had a nightmare in a few years.
Nightmares take place in REM sleep, much like dreams. That's that good sleep, the deep stuff. And because REM cycles get longer as time goes on, most nightmares that you have happen closer to the morning. They happen in like the early morning hours instead of like typically you don't wake up in a cold sweat and it's like, you know, 11:30 at night and you've just had a very, very quick nightmare. I didn't realize that's the distinction between nightmares and night terrors. Night terrors typically happen like pretty soon after you fall asleep, and they are more based in, they feel like feelings rather than dreams. So it's like a completely sort of different thing. And that is not what I'm talking about. Night terrors are horrifying and scary. Nightmares are sometimes spontaneous, but they also have a lot of attributable causes. Eating before bed, like you, I think you hear that in like a Christmas carol, like you're just a glob of mustard. But eating right before bed can increase your metabolism and brain activity, which can contribute to having more nightmares. There are medications, specifically ones that act on the brain, like antidepressants and narcotics are associated with nightmares, as are some like psychological medications, things like a lot of blood pressure medication has been attributed to nightmares. Sleep deprivation can be a trigger, which is a vicious cycle because it can also lead to sleep deprivation. I have had nightmares that are so rough and rumbled that when I wake up, I am so like you know, yeah, jacked that I just cannot fall asleep, which then makes me more sleep deprived, which then makes it more.
That is likely. Still something I hold on to today that started happening as I was a kid. You know, the idea that you wake up from a nightmare and sometimes if you fall back asleep right away, you will like be in it again.
Yes.
I feel like that happened a lot as a kid and I like would teach myself to try and stay awake for a while. And I still do that as an adult.
Not great. It's not a great behavior. And then also just like anxiety and depression and of course, PTSD. Can also like lend themselves to chronic nightmares, as can sleep disorders like sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome. And yeah, nightmares are fucking brutal and they are bad. The good news is that they do have a lot of, you know, attributable causes. And so there are things that you can do to limit them if you do end up having them like chronically before they can have like a detrimental effect on your health. So nightmares are not wonderful. I have them a lot and frequently like wake up literally covered in sweat. I showed you the like griffin sized sweat mark in our bed from the other day when I woke up in the middle of one. And right, it's rough. What is wonderful is that sense of relief when you wake up from a nightmare and you realize that it wasn't real.
This was a long walk, Griffin.
I told you I needed like 5 to 6 minutes to get there, but now we're here. In the same way that when I have the dream that I have that I'm like always the most pumped about is like the telekinesis dream, which is like, oh shit, it's real. I'm moving stuff with my mind. Yeah. Oh, I probably won't remember how to do it. Oh, I can't remember how to do it. I just have this superpower now. And then I wake up and I'm like, ah, fuck. Let me at least try and turn the lamp on with my mind. No. Ah, fuck. It was a dream. Damn it. This is the inversion of that, where I have some horrible dream. Yeah. And my nightmares are never like I'm being chased by a killer through the woods. It is typically like either way more apocalyptic than that or something like a person that I know has like passed away and now I'm sad. Yeah. Or like I very frequently have the actor's nightmare of just being on a stage and not knowing any of the words of the show and being like humiliated about that. And much like Christmas Carol, which I referenced earlier, when you wake up from one of those nightmares and it's like, boy, what day is it today? It wasn't real. Like, that is incredible. That is the good stuff for me. And it also sometimes has like a very tangible effect on my life. I remember when I was living in Chicago, I was having nightmares like literally every night, just constantly. I was having nightmares because I wasn't like leaving the house and I was like super depressed and not really doing anything about it. I was eating like garbage and just like not taking care of myself. So my nightmares were just like constant. And I had one where a friend of mine had died and I was just like, it was so real. It was like I had woken up and my friend was gone.
Yeah.
And I was like so heartbroken about it. And so when I woke up the next morning and realized that it wasn't real, I was so over the moon and I got back in touch with that friend and like stayed in better touch with them because I felt this like incredible relief that they were still there. And it made me feel more sort of like grateful. That is the like best case scenario of it. But even just like a dream where, you know, the world is ending or whatever, and the anxiety that that brings about and having that just be nullified is kind of like a superpower.
That is nice. I will have dreams a lot of times where I am in some kind of argument with somebody. And it is nice to wake up and be like, oh, good, that didn't happen.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I don't really have anything else to say. I couldn't find a lot of like research on this. There's a lot of research on what causes nightmares. And I am not, please do not walk away from this segment thinking that I'm saying like, nightmares kick ass. They're not. But that like second chance, it feels like a second chance that you get sometimes after like a really, really vivid, really realistic nightmare that makes you feel grateful that it wasn't real when you wake up in the morning. Like, there's not a lot of research on that, but it is. I had a terrible dream last night, and this morning I woke up and it wasn't real, and I was very, very. I had a little spring in my step. It was really nice. That was a weird segment.
Yeah, it was a real glasses half full kind of moment for
you.
Yeah,
thank you. Well, that's the whole thing here in the show. Speaking of glasses half full, you know what else is more than half empty? In fact, it's 3/4 empty and change is the Max Fun Drive. We're almost out of time, folks. You want to talk some about the gifts you can get for giving at the different levels?
Yeah, so Griffin mentioned if you give $5 a month, which I'm just going to do the math for you on that, that's $60.
A year.
For a year.
Yeah, it's
a, yeah. Well, some people hear $5 a month and they think, I have no idea what that would be. That's $60, friends.
Rachel can multiply literally any number times 12. Like, give it like 12. 12 times 12.
144.
There it is. Baby bazinga. 10.
Wait, 12 times 10? 120.
Like, it's nothing, folks.
Yeah.
Like,
it's nothing. Let's stop there. Let's
please.
Yeah,
because if I said like 7.
Let's please immediately stop there.
Okay.
And that's bonus content, right?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of bonus content. And I know some of you are reaching the end of your podcast feed because you've had a lot more time to sit around and listen.
Yes.
This would just dump a whole bunch of new podcasts right in your lap from your favorite Max Fun hosts. So $5 a month, that's a win-win for everybody.
Sure. What about at 10?
At 10. So a lot of folks are looking for ways to show their support and their love for particular podcasts. $10 a month, you get to pick a pin associated with your favorite podcast. You put that pin on a backpack. You put it on a purse. You put it on a jacket.
Yep.
And you've got that pin.
You got that pin. It was designed by Megan Lincott, who makes new designs every year. And they are these just really nice enamel pins. And you're going to love it. You also get a little Max Fun membership card. And you also get the bonus content that you get for the $5 tier. What about at $20 a month?
At $20 a month. So it is not a surprise to a lot of you, but many of our Max Fun listeners, kind of gamers.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of a gamer type out there. And you'll get playing cards.
Yes.
You'll get dice.
Yes.
All like specifically related to and in tribute to the Maximum Fun shows and family.
Yes.
And I think, you know, $20 a month might be a little steep for some of you, but if you've got that, that's a nice little benefit for you if you're able to give at that level.
Yeah, it really does not matter what level you give at, and straight up, like, we know it is a terrible time out here, and that a lot of you are not in a position to become members at all, and that's totally fine. We fully understand that. We also hear from some folks like, hey, sorry, $5 a month is all I can do right now. Like, that's incredible. You are literally, you know, putting energy into something that you like, and you are allowing us to do the exact same thing. And like, it doesn't matter what, you know, how much you are able to do that. The fact that you have chosen to do that at all is a really, really remarkable thing. And it means the absolute world to us. So yeah, go to maximumfun.org/join, look at the different levels that you're able to give. If you're already a member, you've been like listening to a lot more of our shows, maybe during quarantine, you've been holed up and, you know, you've been consuming more Max Fun shows and you want to, you know, up your donation, you can jump up to a new level, or you can boost by just like kicking up your donation level a couple bucks, maybe not up to the next, you know, tier. If you don't want to go from 5 to 10, you could do 7 or whatever. That's an option that's available to you now. You can also gift memberships to other folks if they are not able to, you know, become supporters, but they really want to, or they want some of those the pledge gifts. You can do that as well. But yeah, please think about supporting us. Your support has allowed us to make these shows what they are. And we can't thank you enough.
It's maximumfun.org/join.
And hey, can I steal you away?
Yes.
Okay. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Lectric e-bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at lectricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C e-bikes.com. Hey, we have a couple of Grombo prawns here, and I would love to read one of them, if you wouldn't mind me doing that.
Please do.
Okay, here's one, and it's for, and I didn't say this. Like, I didn't make this name up because it's going to sound rude, but it is for Taylor, a.k.a. Stinky. Like, I would never, like, to a person I don't know very well, I would never.
Not even to a person you know very well. You're very polite.
Thank you. It is from Allison, a.k.a. Stinkus, and I wouldn't do that either, and you know me. Anyway, Stinkus says to Stinky, "Dearest Stinky, I am so glad you enjoy this good podcast that brings me light even in the darkest of times. I think that qualifies for now. And you have a fine tushy, and I'm glad to have spent 3 years with you, and ideally many more, all my love, Stinkus." I've never seen the word tushy spelled out like this. It's T-O-O-S-H-I-E. And I would love for Merriam and Webster to just follow in this grand example and update the book. Because I know they do that a lot these days. Tushy.
You want to push the button we have to indicate to Merriam Webster that we have a suggestion?
I want them to change it. Actually, if I have power over it, I will make them change it to say tushy. like Mr. Stanley, but referring to a buttock.
Mm-hmm. Can I read you the next one?
Please do.
This is a message for Spike. It is from Justine. "Hi, Honey Bun. Marrying you is the best thing I ever did, aside from when I asked you to walk me to my car and Closer by Nine Inch Nails played at top volume when I started it. You're my best friend and an authentic fart and the best person I know. Hope this message makes your day."
Do you think when people write in the Jumbotrons, they understand your aversion to like scatological gastrointestinal sort of?
I hope not. And now that you've brought it up, I'm even more concerned.
I mean, I had to call two people stink adjacent. So we all have our crosses to bear today.
I really enjoy the Closer by Nine Inch Nails reference.
Sure.
Really brings me back.
Number two.
You about my
who does number
thing.
Two work for? Who does number two work for?
I gotta find a new host
to do the show with you.
I gotta find someone who not only does not do Austin Powers, but has never seen an Austin Powers film.
Whoa!
I'm gonna put an ad out.
Our babysitter's pretty young. If do you want me to go tag out? She maybe hasn't seen him. Hey, what's your second thing?
My second thing is the Ferris wheel.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I feel like everything I know about the Ferris wheel came from Devil in the White City.
Oh yeah. I mean, that would be appropriate, right?
It would be appropriate. Have you read that book?
I have not. No.
Oh man, it kicks ass.
I may be actually restating some of the information that is in there.
Oh, you almost certainly are. It's a book that is largely about the Ferris wheel at one point.
Yeah, yeah. I love the Ferris wheel.
Sure.
When I was a kid and I was a little terrified of roller coasters, Ferris wheel was my go-to.
Yeah.
Like, I want to get up there. I want to see the park. I want to see the sights. Particularly scared of the upside downs. And you can't do that with a Ferris wheel.
No.
At least not on most of them.
Want to know which games have the best like stuffed animal part? Like, where's the big Sponges Bobs? Where's the big Sponges Bobs at? Because those are the games I'm going to make a beeline to.
You can see it from up high.
I'm not going to waste my fucking money on the frog hammer launch game. I'm not going to do the ping pong balls into the fish bowls. No way.
Also, Ferris wheel, good for cuddling. Good for smooching.
Oh, it's no one can see. When you're at the zenith of it, you're the highest in the park. No one's going to see you necking.
Mm-hmm.
But you do have a limited arc there to neck before your youth pastor can see you again.
A lot of the rides are restrictive. You know, you're really buckled in. You can't do the arm around the shoulder, but you can with the Ferris wheel.
Also, Tunnel of Love is not a thing that actually exists anywhere in the actual world.
Well, I mean, the dark rides.
Dark Ride. Yeah, what are you gonna do? You gonna kiss on the, you know, haunted house ride?
You're gonna ask the ride attendant exactly how long the ride is so you know how much time you have to work with?
No way, man.
Ferris wheel. So was not the actual like first of its kind. The big Ferris wheel we know about, designed by George Washington Gale Ferris, was after there had been such a creation by William Summers, who built a 50-foot wooden wheel at Asbury Park, Atlantic City, and Coney Island.
Whoa, okay.
He called it a roundabout.
Okay.
But the Ferris wheel was designed as kind of the answer to the Eiffel Tower. The World's Columbian Exposition was happening in Chicago. This is in the 1890s. And the Eiffel Tower had just come out, and everybody's like, well, what are we going to do? And it was kind of the big task. There was a man named Daniel Burnham in late 1890 that was tasked with kind of turning this this little square mile of Chicago into a world showcase. And he approached a bunch of designers and said, we've got to figure something out. It's got to be as good as the Eiffel Tower, but is not just the Eiffel Tower.
This is explicitly, you have to read Devil in the White. It is explicitly about Daniel Burnham and the like incredible infrastructural challenge of creating this World's Fair.
So George Washington Gale Ferris, who at the time was 33 years old and from Pittsburgh, said like, all right, I've got an idea. And he was initially in charge with inspecting the steel used by the fair and thought, oh, well, let's do a huge revolving steel wheel. And everybody was like, that'll never work. And he spent a lot of his own money making sure that it could happen. So he spent $25,000 on safety studies and hiring more engineers and recruiting investors, all to make this happen. And it ultimately measured 250 feet in diameter.
What's up? How's your shitty 50-foot wheel?
Had 36 cars, which made it capable of holding 60 people.
That's so fucking big to get on something like that in the 19th century. Let me just hop aboard this 250 foot tall man-made object in the 19th century.
And get like way higher than I have ever been in my life.
Yeah.
You know? Over the next 19 weeks, more than 1.4 million people paid 50 cents for a 20-minute ride, during that time period. And I will say the most notable part of this wheel was an 89,000 pound axle that had to be hoisted onto two towers, 140 feet in the air. Just the construction of this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. Obviously the Eiffel Tower gets a lot of credit for even inspiring somebody to think this big.
Well, the Eiffel Tower was a creation of what was essentially like a Parisian World's Fair. Like it was its own sort of like... Everything like that made in that era was just an engineering flex of just like, yep, now we've made the greatest object currently extant in the world.
Yeah.
And so that's what this was a swing at.
The Ferris wheel that was created for this Columbian Exposition did not survive.
No.
It actually made its way to St. Louis. It was sold for the 1904 Louisiana Purchase Exposition in St. Louis, and then 2 years later, dynamited. So
that's the only way to kill this big, bastard.
Ferris also became immersed in a lot of lawsuits about debts that he owed suppliers and that the fair owned him. It did not end well for him, which I mean, you invest a lot of your own money into something. There's always some risks associated with that.
Yeah.
There is a big Ferris wheel in Chicago today.
Sure.
Do you ever go up in that Navy Pier Ferris wheel?
I never really went to Navy Pier.
There's not a lot there.
Well, yeah. And also I didn't really know anybody in Chicago. So that's a weird solo excursion, I feel like. So let me just go to the Navy Pier Ferris wheel by myself.
The Navy Pier Ferris wheel was added to Pier Park in 1995. It was 150 feet tall and 40 gondolas. In 2016, they updated it up to 200 feet and had climate-controlled gondolas.
Ooh.
The biggest Ferris wheel currently 2014 in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. 550 feet tall.
That's quite large.
That's a big one.
Big one, guys. That's so big.
Yeah, you can learn a lot. There's a lot. I mean, it becomes kind of a showpiece for a lot of cities because it looks great on a skyline.
I love it in a skyline. I was just about to say, like, London has it there. I forget I feel like I know its name. It's on the tip of my tongue. Hong Kong has like a great one, I remember. Love it. I love Apple TV does this incredible screensaver, essentially, which is just like these panoramic sweeping shots of either different sort of like beautiful environments or city skylines. And I feel like I can identify most cities by the Ferris wheel that they have going on.
The London one's called the London Eye,
yes,
by the way. I don't know. It seems kind of ridiculous in a lot of ways because it's, it takes up a lot of space, you know, not a lot of people can be on it at once.
Yeah.
You know, it's not exactly a thrilling thing for a lot of people now that if they've been on a bunch of roller coasters, but I love it. There's something kind of romantic and beautiful about it.
It's great. It's a good shape. It's the simplicity of it is what makes it so perfect.
Plus, it's always fun to think about it, you know, coming off of its stand.
Sure, and you
rolling,
roll for a while. You'd probably be terribly injured.
Yeah.
But what a way to go, right? You're like, how did your Uncle Mike pass away? Oh, heart failure. That's too bad. How did your Uncle Mike pass away? Oh, well, okay. He was on this Ferris wheel, and it came off the thing.
That Ferris wheel went down the highway?
It was radical. Hey, can I tell you my second thing?
Yes.
So excited for this one. It is my favorite music video of all time. Hands down, no competition. For also an exceptional song. It is the music video for Scenario by A Tribe Called Quest, featuring Leaders of the New School, which I finally kind of looked into the origins of this collaboration and learned a whole lot. But Scenario is one of the all-time best like hip-hop bangers in the like history of recorded music. It is widely regarded as the Tribe's best like song and also one of the best posse cut, which is just like...
Oh, yeah, it makes
sense. It's like essentially just like a pseudo-competitive round robin of MCs just like each doing a verse.
Yeah, I feel like anybody like that can very like... strongly remember their introduction to hip hop and kind of as they explore the genre will have a Tribe Called Quest.
Yes.
Kind of moment
they did a lot of collaborations, a lot of posse cuts. And this is, you know, it's their best known song. So it is, of course, their best known collaboration with Leaders of the New School, who were this like young upstart quartet from Long Island. And they were like young as hell and making this huge name for themselves. They started opening for Public Enemy, and Chuck D was like this like father to them, gave two of their members their names. Those two members were Charlie Brown and a young Busta Rhymes. Was the standout member of Leaders of the New School. And in fact, like after this collaboration, after Scenario, where A Tribe Called Quest was like, these guys are fucking incredible. Let's you know, get them on a track. Busta Rhymes was like, this was the launch pad for his career. And while I think Charlie Brown also, like everybody is incredible in this song, Busta Rhymes is the only one that kind of just had this meteoric rise that his bandmates did not necessarily follow that same trajectory, which led to a bit of hostility between them, some of which was actually sort of aired out during a kind of infamous episode of UMTV Raps. But this song is fucking amazing. Busta Rhymes comes in with the very last verse, and it is like so memorable. There's so many like memorable like single like pairings of lines in this song that
you hear sampled all the time.
Who's That Brown is like in so many fucking songs, and it's three words. And so like hearing it and knowing like a little bit about like who has sampled what and hearing it all in the same fucking track is like a staggering history lesson contained in one single, just absolute bop. I'm going to play a little bit of it now because I know that it's, you know, it was recorded in 1991, so there's probably a lot of our listeners who have maybe never even heard it. So here is Busta Rhymes' verse at the end of Scenario.
Watch as I combine all the juice from the mind. Heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind. Powerful impact, boom, from the cannon. Now bragging, try to reap a mind. Just imagine, rope can't build, there is necessary. When digging into my library, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Eating, I do stew like the one pizza tosser. All over the track, man. As I come back, as I did, I had to make you.
Well earned. His career launch off this song was well earned because that verse is so fucking good. When I hear this song, I don't just want to listen to it, though. I absolutely have to watch the music video because it is.
I was not familiar with the video. Like, I had heard the song, you know, hundreds of times, and then I watched the video and I was like, I don't think I have ever seen this before.
You're on this level with me now, though, right? That it is like all time fucking amazing.
It's very nostalgic for a lot of reasons.
It is 1991 sort of like boiled down into this beautiful prismatic crystal. It was directed by Jim Swofield, who did a lot of work with A Tribe Called Quest and directed like a few music videos back in that day. Most famously, the music video for Summertime by DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Oh my God.
Which is another great music video. But Scenario plays out like, and I would encourage you to just watch it now before I talk about it because it will be impossible for me to describe the rampant charm of this video. It is shown as an interactive computer desktop where windows appear like featuring like low res videos of, you know, the members of A Tribe Called Quest and leaders just like going at it, or clips from like, you know, concerts. And
are there particular video games being referenced? Like,
no.
Okay. Cause I saw some of the like little interactive elements.
Yes.
Reminded me of these like game player creation.
Well, what it is reminiscent of is just some Windows 3.0 ass interfaces that run the gamut from like, they're present in the entire video. It is shown as like these overlapping windows of that are popping up of like non-extant applications. At one point, Fife Dog is doing a verse and he appears in this like salon app where a menu toggles him through like various haircuts. That's a trick that they really like to go through. I think at one point Busta Rhymes is doing a verse, but he's wearing a green screen shirt. And so the app is like switching the shirt between different patterns. They really, really like that trick. There's like fake camera control editing interfaces that is like switching between like Dutch angles and all kinds of different things. At one point there are inscrutable like cameos of just like a window will pop up and there's Redman, or a window will pop up and it's just like, there's Spike Lee for some fucking reason.
I did a double take when I saw that. I was like, whoa, wait.
Why is Spike Lee there? Spike Lee's just
really
like,
him.
He appears in a window. He's just kind of like bopping his head along with the music. It's like, okay, I guess. It is so much of it is like kind of like nonsensical, but it is also like extremely fresh and like playful. And again, like, just some Microsoft Encarta ass interfaces that feel so, so, so wildly nostalgic.
Yeah,
and so,
I think for sure it was based on some actual existing game because it seems so precise.
No, I mean, there were certain games like MTV Music Generator, or there was a Sega CD game called Make My Video.
Oh.
And in Make My Video, which would have come out maybe mid-90s, I want to say, there was, I think it came with just like two songs. I think one of them was Jump Jump. And you could like press different buttons on the controller to switch between different like video feeds, so you would like edit together essentially a very bare bones music video, essentially just using three different feeds of music, and then at the end a director or producer would be like, hey, that was pretty good, you got 90%. So maybe it's like, I don't know, it feels like this video informed that game more than that game informed this video, but it is just so it is so 90s. But it is also so fucking fun. And the song is so fucking good. And I get like obsessed with it. I will like think about it and I will be like, oh, I haven't watched that in a while. And I will watch it. And then it will be all I can think about for like a solid week. I've watched it like eight times today. It's so beautiful and incredible and good. And you should watch it again. If you've heard the song and you know the song rips, but you've never seen the music video, you owe it to yourself to go on this journey And you also owe it to yourself to go on the journey of going to MaximumFun.org/join. And for the last time, we will ask you to consider becoming a supporter of the network. Shows like ours, shows like Jordan Jesse Go, Stop Podcasting Yourself, the other shows that the McRoy family does, Mabim Bam, Adventure Zone, all of those shows exist and have become what they are now because of the support that we've gotten from our members through the Max Fun Drive.
Thank you, Maximum Fun.
Thank you, Maximum Fun, for having us and for everything you do. And thank you to you. One last time, MaximumFun.org/join. Thank you to Bo Inn and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And
thank you to Griffin.
Thank you to Rachel.
We're a good team.
That's funny because like 10 minutes ago, you said you wanted to replace me.
It's just Mike Myers has consistently driven a wedge between us.
Sure. But not you love So I Married an Axe Murderer. That's like your shit.
I haven't watched it in a very long time. I don't even know if I feel comfortable saying that anymore. I think my hostility towards Mr. Myers has grown such that I might not appreciate it as much.
Well, yeah, I will admit that you are not a fan of Mr. Powers or Mr. Shrek or Mr. Borat, which like he didn't do, but I also think you could lay some
informed.
You could lay some of the blame.
There would be no Borat without without Mr. Myers.
Yeah. Hmm. It's interesting. You can read Rachel's entire sort of capstone paper that she wrote in college about, is Borat Mike Myers? It goes off the rails, but I mean, it's 60 pages of like well-researched, well-documented, and, mm-hmm. and well-cited information. Mm-hmm. So what was the conclusion that you arrived at for that paper?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a short end. Long
road to get there.
Body of research, a lot of surveys, a lot of focus groups. Ultimately, no.
Yeah, the answer was no. It was a different actor.
Yeah.
You did that.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.